Do you have a Sunday basket? If you don't know what the Sunday basket is, you can go to episode 101 and learn more. But most of you know what a Sunday basket is, and some of you have started making your Sunday basket, but a lot of you, that's as far as you get. You get the Sunday basket made, and then you don't go through it. So if you're stuck, listen at the end of this podcast for how the virtual Sunday basket organizing workshops can help you move forward. And now, on to the show. Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. My name is Lisa Woodruff, and I'm a professional organizer and blogger in Cincinnati, Ohio. I want to help you get your home organized and help you organize life stages and unexpected events. So sit back, relax, and let's get organized. I am super excited to be sharing with you this next series of podcasts all about how the different phases of the life overlap, and most people are living in overlapped phases of life, and I want to address that. And I've wanted to record these podcasts probably for 9 months, but it never was the right season to do them. I mean, if I did them in January, you would listen, but really, in January, you want to dig deep and get into an organizational project. Or in March, you just want to declutter and clear things out. But May is the perfect time to record this podcast series. May, you already have enough on your to-do list. You don't need me to be giving you any additional organizational ideas or tasks. You've got your plan and you're running with it. So these next three Friday podcasts are more going to be like Lisa storytelling, just kind of changing your mindset, but there's no actionable steps that you need to do. You can just marinate on this information. And really, these three podcasts are going to be ones that I can refer people to in the future. They're podcasts that when you need them right now. And when you don't need them, they're just stories. So these podcasts are all related to this idea that I have that there are four phases of a woman's life. There's childhood, accumulation, survival, and downsizing. And I'm going to summarize those real quick, and then I'll tell you how we're going to dive deeper. So as a child, you typically live in your parents' house anywhere from birth until 18 or 21. And all of your needs are pretty much met. In your parents' house, the only responsibility you have for organization typically is your bedroom. And slowly over time, you either take upon that responsibility yourself if your parents aren't organized, or if they are organized, they usually help you along and give you rules like I would with my kids, like I'm not driving you anywhere until I can see your floor again, or I'm not doing your laundry until you bring it down to the laundry room. So if your parents are organized, they kind of make you organize your room. And if they're not organized, the organized among children will organize their own rooms in order to have that order. So along the way, you either learn to organize or you don't learn to organize as a child, and then you move out on your own. Sometime after the age of 18, you will move out of your parents' house into your own apartment, condo, house, whatever. And once you move into whatever that is you move into, you are now in the accumulation phase. Even if you don't get married and don't have kids, you are definitely in the accumulation phase. Because every single thing you want to go do, like even hang a picture, you realize you don't own a hammer and nails. Time to cut the grass. Great. I don't own a lawnmower. I want to plant flowers. I don't have a shovel. I don't have a water bucket. I want to clean the kitchen floor. How do we clean kitchen floors? Anyway, Mom always did that. And every single thing you go to do the first couple years when you live on your own, you realize you don't own any of the stuff you need to do that. And you get in this accumulation phase. You get the apartment and then you get everything you need for the apartment and you get a job and you get the clothes you need for the job and then you need a car and the car has maintenance. Just right there, you're in accumulation. But the majority of people also add a spouse and children, and that just exponentially grows the amount of accumulation that you need, because the more people, the more stuff. I mean, there's more food, there's more clothes, there's more cleaning, there's just more. And babies are so cute and teeny, teeny, tiny, and all the stuff that goes with them would fill a house. Like, it's crazy the amount of stuff that you have when you have a little newborn baby. So that is accumulation. Somewhere along the line, I say it's at 40, you enter survival. And I say it's at 40. I know it starts at 35, but I make this distinction of 40 because 40 is when your mindset shifts. It actually starts at 35, but at 40, I don't know how to explain it, but everybody who's turned 40 agrees with me. Like, there is something that happens in your mind at 40 where all of a sudden you aren't as worried as much about what everybody else thinks. Your parents, your friends, you're just not as worried about what they think. You know that you are going to do what's right for your family within this house, and you just have more confidence. So survival is when you're in your car all the time. And in the United States, the majority of people almost always work between the ages of 40 and 55. Even if they're stay-at-home moms in their 20s and 30s, they usually are bringing in some kind of an income as soon as they hit 40. It's just demographically true. So because of that, if you do have kids, then you're in survival. You're trying to take care of the kids, and you're trying to take care of your house, and you're trying to earn an income. And those three things suck all of your time away. And typically, you spend most of your time in the car, so you can't even get household projects done because you aren't at home. Now, remember, this is just like, we have to have a baseline of where to talk from. So these are just the baselines of what I defined. Then somewhere around the age of 55 plus is when you move into downsizing and legacy. If you had your kids in your 20s, they're now in their college years, and you're like, great, they've gone to college. I'm getting rid of all of this crap in the house. Like, I'm clearing things out. And it's almost like a reverse nesting, like when you're going to have a baby, you nest. And then when they go off to college, it's like a reverse nesting. Maybe it's mom's way of taking control of the situation because they really aren't in control anymore because their kids are launching. But there's this downsizing that naturally happens over the age of 55 as you start to lessen the amount of things in your house. You start to make decisions about what you want to save. And then the legacy part is key. Why are you saving what you're saving? And what is the ultimate purpose of it? Like, how are the grandkids going to use these things? Now, I often give references to kids and grandparents, and I understand that not everybody listening has children or even wants to have children. However, you are a child. So if I say, you know, that women in their late 50s and 60s are downsizing and they're thinking of the legacy of what they want to pass on, while you may be in your 50s and 60s and never had children, fine, you're not thinking about the legacy you want to pass on. But I find that's not true. Like, the women that I work with in their 50s and 60s, they're thinking about the legacy that they want to pass on to their nieces and nephews or their cousins. Like, they do want to leave their legacy to someone, even if it's not their children. And you're a kid. You're a kid of somebody. I mean, your parents may have passed, but if they haven't passed and you're listening to me talk about this downsizing legacy phase, they're probably in that phase, and that's going to help you understand why they're doing what they're doing. Okay? All right. So that is my 1950s view of childhood, accumulation, survival, and downsizing. I am a very traditional kid. Like, I wanted to have the white picket fence. I wanted to have four kids. I wanted to homeschool. I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. That's what I wanted. That was my dream. I'm very, very traditional in my view of men and women. I am Gen X. I am 45. And so growing up, I watched shows like Leave It to Beaver and The Brady Bunch. And those were, and I also watched the Cliff Huxtable one, whatever that one is called. I loved that show. It did not occur to me that she was a working woman until 4 years ago. I watched the Huxtables for a decade, and it never occurred to me that she was not a stay-at-home mom. Because in my mind, I so much wanted to be a stay-at-home mom that I saw everybody as a stay-at-home mom. Also, interesting to note, I loved The Brady Bunch. I've probably watched every single episode, not recently, but when they were out, I watched them multiple times. It's so interesting. I identified with Alice the most because Alice was a stay-at-home mom. That mom worked too, and I didn't even notice it. Like, I was so wanting to be a stay-at-home mom that I resonated with Alice, who was the housekeeper, because she was the one that took care of the home. I've always wanted to take care of the home. Whenever you're listening to a podcast or reading a book or talking to a friend, it's helpful to know their point of view. So my point of view is I always wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. However, I come from a long line of entrepreneurs. My great-grandmother in the 30s had four different businesses. So every woman in my family all the way back four generations went to college and owned their own businesses. but they also, in my view, were stay-at-home moms because they always had businesses like mine where they were able to do all of the driving, all of the carpool, all of whatever the kids needed, and they worked around their kids' schedules. So even though my lineage all the way back, the women worked, in my mind, they didn't. Isn't that kind of odd? I just had that realization the other day that like I watched movies in the 80s of working women that their children were in daycare, and the kids in my family were never in daycare, even though the women earned an income, and my kids were never in daycare, even though I've always earned an income. So I'm telling you way too much, but my view of a working woman was somebody whose kids went to daycare. So since nobody in our family sent their kids to daycare, they must not have been working women. Isn't that so weird? So I tell you all this because we're always trying to put things in a box to make more sense of them, which is why I came up with the childhood accumulation, survival, and downsizing concept, that there are these phases of life. And in each of these phases of life, there is different organization needed. Like when you are in the accumulation stage, you are buying stuff. And you need to figure out where to put it, or you need to get a bigger house or something. And when you're in the survival phase of life, you are in your car all the time. So it better be decked out with everything that you need. And you better be using your phone to do everything that you need, so when you get home, you don't forget things. Or my favorite organizational hack right now in their survival years is post-it notes and index cards. If I don't have 5 different index cards I'm carrying around by the end of the day of ideas I've had or things I need to do, I don't think that's ever happened. Like, I just actually went through the index cards to remember what I wanted to tell you on this podcast, because I'll get a great idea while I'm dropping the kids off at school. I'm in the car 25 hours a week. I have to write down these ideas when I have them, and then I assimilate them on Sunday into something that is comprehensible. Okay, so that's why I came up with the phases that I came up with, and there are different organizational tactics for each. There are 3 big life events that impact these phases and can make them seem like they are moving or they are combining. One is, if you do have children, when you have those children. The second one is when a life event happens and you become a caretaker. So you become power of attorney, power of healthcare, or physically the caretaker for someone. And the third time is when someone very close to you passes away and all of those responsibilities come on you. You are the executor, or you are the sibling of the executor, and then all of the decisions about that funeral, that estate, that loved one's possessions, their papers, that all comes on you. So in this podcast, I'm going to address when you have your children and how that affects the phases of life. Next week, I'm going to talk about when you become a caretaker, which usually happens instantaneously, how that rocks your world and really adjusts what phase of life you're in. And the third one will be when someone very close passes away to you, either your spouse or your parents. And I'll probably talk more about parents than spouses because I luckily do not have the experience of having lost a spouse. And I know that is a little bit different, probably a lot different than losing a parent. There are not going to be show notes for these next 3 podcasts because this is really story time with Lisa. And we're just changing our mindset and we're learning. Actually, the next 2 probably will have show notes, but this one won't. So when you have your kids, when I was growing up, my thought was always I would have my kids in my 20s. And I did. Joey and Abby were born right before I turned 30. So I had a baby at 28 and a baby at 29. Which was actually later than I wanted to on my plan, but that was the first time God told me that I wasn't going to get to make all of the plans. So I had my babies before I was 30, and my husband's 5 years older than I am, so it was right before he turned 35. In my family, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, my mother all had their babies like at 22, 23, 24. Like they started having their first babies at 22. I was born when my mom was 22, almost 23, I think, but early 20s. And my parents would often say, this is going to be so awesome because the kids will be launched and we will be empty nesters in our 40s. And I was like, wow, that sounds really good to me, like to have your kids launched and be able to have your life and, you know, enjoy your spouse. And so I always had that in my mind that my mom, my grandmother, my great-grandmother always had their kids very young. And the other nice thing about that is you have our generations are super, super close in age. So I had great grandparents because there aren't a lot of spaces in between the generations on my mom's side of the family. And they almost always had one or two kids. They didn't have large families, so they were done with their childbearing years, usually by the age of 25. In my dad's family, that's an Irish Catholic family, a lot bigger families, a lot longer generations. So in my mom's family, they had their kids young, and then by the time they were in their late 40s, their kids were launched, right? So that was my original goal. So when I think about the phases of life and accumulation, in my mind, it all gets smushed together in your 20s. You're getting a job, you're getting a house, you're getting a spouse, you're getting kids, all within that first decade. That is not what's actually happening anymore. I'm the oldest of all my cousins on both sides of the family, and almost all of them are having their very first babies in their early 40s. They did not have their kids in their 20s and 30s. It wasn't by design. I'm noticing with a lot of my college friends also, they're having their children in late 30s, early 40s. People are getting married later. They're struggling more with infertility, as Greg and I did. There are just a lot of societal reasons. They have big student loans to pay off. Society is just different now than it was when I started having my babies almost 20 years ago. And I was a very, I was very goal-oriented and very traditional. So I just followed the traditional path. I would say I'm more like a baby boomer Gen Xer than a millennial Gen Xer. So I'm noticing that a lot of the millennials are putting off having their children. And there are a couple reasons for this. Number one, college is a lot more expensive and they kind of need to pay that off before they accumulate more because they've already accumulated student loan debt. So last weekend, I was at a conference and I met a couple of ladies and I asked them to go to dinner with me afterwards. They were all in the millennial generation. And we talked for almost 3 hours, and we would have stayed there forever. Like, we had to finally cut it off and be like, okay, we all have to go to bed. I had such a great time talking with them. You know, I have all these questions about how I view the world and how I see generations, and I wanted to see if I was spot on or not, because there's so much media out there about what millennials are like, and it wasn't what I thought millennials were like. So in that conversation, they said, Lisa, you really understand generations. Like, you even understand our generation. We don't know anybody that understands all of the generations the way that you do. And you understand us better than other people who say we are what we're like. I love all generations. I love diversity. I love what each brings to the table. So the book Generations by Neil Strauss and William Howe, it's a big thick book. You cannot get it on Kindle, and it's very like nerdy like I am. It really explains how there are these four generations and they're cyclical and they go throughout the United States history. It's just based on the United States history and how each one has a certain purpose in the society. And millennials have a certain purpose in society, and they are having their children later, and they have a good reason for having their children later. But they are also accumulating stuff. They're accumulating houses and spouses. And anyway, I don't know how to, maybe this will come up in another podcast, but they're having their children later. And a lot of Gen Xers are having their children later. Part of this, I was listening to another podcast or a book. Ooh, I'm going to review this book called Outliers. That's going to be the next book that I review. And Outliers talk about these trough generations, which I think Gen X is probably a trough generation. It's when there are not as many kids and they get some of the extra benefits because there aren't as many kids. And they're able to have different outcomes in life because of where they're born in society. So like when I graduated in the 1990s, it was fairly easy for me to get a job. These millennials, as they're graduating in large amounts. I mean, obviously they've already graduated. And it's super hard for them to get jobs. And they have really big student loan debts. So their generation has some unique characteristics to them, which makes them function in a certain way. So if a Gen X generation, where we were a small generation and came out of college, my parents paid for my college, thank goodness. Many of my friends' parents paid for their college as well. And we were able to get jobs. Well, it was very feasible for me to have children right away. My husband had a good job. I had saved some money. I didn't have any college loan debt. And so it was easy to have children. The millennials, as they came out of college, right into the middle of the worst recession since the Great Depression and with student loan debts. You know, so the whole job market has changed and is changing based on what's happening in technology. It's not as easy for them to be like, oh yeah, 22, I'm going to have kids and then I'm going to stay at home and I'm going to do all these other things. They're having to make different decisions. I love looking at this generational aspect because the other thing that I've mentioned before and I talk about in The Mindset of Organization is another book by Neil Strauss and William Howe that is called The Fourth Turning. And The Fourth Turning talks about not only are there these four generations, but they go in an 80-year cycle. And everything goes in an 80-year cycle. It's not an accident that we had the Great Recession 80 years after the Great Depression, right? But when we look at material possessions and accumulation, the height of that was probably the 80s and 90s. And the turning point was around the year 2000. And now we're hitting almost 2020, which I think is going to be the height of minimalism. And then we will start down the backslide towards accumulation again. And in 2040, that's when people will start accumulating things again. So when I say that, when you're 55 plus, you're looking to downsize and look at your legacy, that is true. But also, all of society, because of the 80-year cycle, is looking to not accumulate as much to begin with. It's not that the people that are in the accumulation and survival phases, which are currently millennials and Gen X, are not accumulating. They are accumulating. You have to buy the hammer to put up the picture, or you're not going to have a picture on the wall. Like, it's not optional. You have to have a hammer. But growing up, we had 8 hammers, and I only have 2 hammers. You know, and maybe millennial kids will only have 1 hammer. Like, they have what they need, but they aren't buying it in all of the colors and all of the sizes, and each person gets one. They aren't buying the amount, but they are still accumulating. So accumulation, survival, downsizing. Now, when you have kids, I don't care if you're a minimalist. Oh, we had this friend growing up. Oh, she was so awesome. She was a minimalist. Her whole entire house was white. And all of the kids' clothes were like bought at Land's End. They were all exactly the same. There was no stuff in her house. I babysat once and I went to make food and there was like cream of wheat, like, which I'd never had before, and something else. Like, there, I think I made peanut butter and jelly. I think she had enough to make peanut butter and jelly. I could not figure out what to eat in that house. But she was really fun. She had a boat. She was just such a fun person, but she had no stuff. And this is really interesting. Some of you, this will be the nugget that you love. So her kids' bedrooms had like beds in it and books and a couple of things. They didn't have a lot of stuff in their bedroom. So she had the kids' dressers, everyone's dressers in the laundry room. She had a big laundry room and all of the clothes lived in the laundry room, dirty, clean, whatever. Like, they never came out of the laundry room. And then she had what are called 24-hour clothes. So Sarah had 24-hour clothes. So you would get your bath at night and you would get dressed in the clothes that you would wear until bath the next night. Now, her kids were little. They were, I don't know, 6 and 8. Like, they weren't really old. So they would get dressed. They would get clean. They would get dressed. They would sleep in those clothes. They would get up. They would play all day. And then they would change clothes at bath time. 24-hour clothes. Cut all of her laundry in half. Brilliant, really. If you have little kids, I highly suggest going to 24-hour clothes. She kept them all in the laundry room, so we didn't have to wonder where everything was. It was all in the laundry room. It was a very minimalistic lifestyle, and it worked really well for her, and there just didn't have to be as many decisions made. But even though she was minimalist, they had to have clothes. Like, they had to have some stuff. You have to accumulate some stuff. And when you have children, while you don't have to have 3 extra saucers like I did, one on each floor, you're probably going to want an extra saucer so your kid can bounce around in it so you can get a shower or go to the bathroom. You're going to need some stuff. And the biggest reason why kids cause accumulation, especially from the ages of 0 to 12 years old, is because they change so fast. They change so fast. Like, you bring the baby home and within 6 weeks, they're in a different size clothing. And within 2 to 3 months, they're in another size clothing. And another 2 to 3 months, they're in another size clothing. And just their first 18 months of life, you will go through 5 different sizes of clothing. That's nuts. And so every 3 months, you're going through and you're getting rid of, not getting rid of, taking out of the closet the things that are too small and buying sizes that are bigger. And when a baby is growing that fast, you get in the mindset of, I don't have the time for this. I'm not going to have the right size. I'm just going to start buying in advance. right? And then you don't get rid of what you already have because there might be another baby following up. And this is expensive. I mean, it's ridiculously expensive just to keep up with their clothing. And then the same thing happens with food. They're either breastfed or bottle fed. And then I don't know what the current trend is, but somewhere along there, for us, it was 4 months, might be 6 months now. I don't know what the current thing is. You start with the baby cereal and then the baby fruits and vegetables, or no, meat and vegetables, and then fruits are later. And they have baby food, and maybe you make your own baby food, and then they could start to eat, I don't know, macaroni and cheese. Probably not. I can't remember. It's amazing to me how much I forget. And then the diapers are all different sizes, right? And weight. And for me, we use different diapers at night than we use during the day because they were the ones that did not leak, and they really did not leak. And then it depends. The boys and the girls, I had a boy and a girl, and the boy diapers had to be different than the girl diapers because I don't even know why. They just needed different diapers. And so you are constantly, just the first 2 years of your child's life, you change their clothing sizes 6 times. Think about how many food choices that you've gone through. And then the diapers. You definitely have to change the diapers and sometimes the brands in those first 2 years of life. And that's just the basics. That's not toys or blankets or doing the nursery or any of that. It is so much. And by the time you have a 2-year-old, you are in full-on accumulation mode, even if you're a minimalist. You are really like, okay, well, what do we need next? And for me, I was always trying to be productive. So I was always trying to buy in advance so I could save money, or so that I didn't have to go shopping if the kids got sick. Because, oh my goodness, by the time they turn 2 or start preschool, goodness gracious, the amount of hours and days you lose to a low-grade fever, and then you're sick, and then your husband's sick. It's just crazy. So you start stockpiling. Because there are weeks that you don't get out of the house, and then you realize, oh, I didn't get out of the house. Well, what if I don't get out of the house next week? I better buy in advance. Once your child goes to preschool, it lessens a little bit. And by the time they're in full day school, first grade, is when the amount of accumulation really can be cut in half. But you're so used to accumulating at that point that often people keep accumulating after first grade. So what I notice is a big turning point for women is when their last child starts full-time school, whether that's kindergarten or first grade, wherever you live. When your last child starts full-time school, that's when you can go through your house and totally declutter, downsize, and create systems going forward. Kids at that age, they will usually change sizes 1 to 2 times a year, but you should be prepared. There will be 1 year. And sometimes it's second grade, third grade, whenever. There will be 1 year where your kids will go through 4 pant sizes. Nobody tells you this. I remember when it happened with Joey. We bought him all new pants for school. And then in November, we had to buy new pants. In January, we had to buy new pants. And in May, we had to buy new pants. He went through 4 sizes of pants in 1 year. And I started to get into the accumulation mode again. And then that size pants stayed the same for 4 years. So you got to be careful when you start accumulating and buying in advance. And my new motto is, don't buy anything in advance. Buy it as you need it. When your first child goes to school all day, if you've been a stay-at-home mom and there's any way that you could take 1 more year off of going back to work, that is the year that I suggest that you go ahead and you organize the entire house. You've been living in it nonstop. You have been sprinting to keep up with the amount of changes just in the clothing and the food and the toys, and your house has gotten very, very accumulated, both in the things you need and in the things that looked fun and you bought because you were stressed out and you were just buying it as a stress relief, and you really never went back through and decluttered everything because you didn't have the time. Are you kidding me? Like, you're chasing babies, trying to make sure they don't put things in their mouth or touch the electrical socket. You're busy. You're very, very busy. So if there's any way to take that year and really clear out your house, it helps. And after your oldest child is in first grade, if you can really slow yourself down on the accumulation trail, it will help you. I didn't really notice until 12 that it was time to slow down. And that's when everything really starts to get cleared out again. Our house is very downsized, and I'm 45, and my kids are teenagers. because by the time they're 12, we're starting to move all of their stuff into their bedrooms, if you've been following the podcast, and we're teaching them to live in their own mini apartments. My kids, Abby, for her 16th birthday, wants to get a refrigerator for her room, and Joey already has a little college dorm room refrigerator in his room. I love that. I love it. They can have the drinks that they want in there, and I'm teaching them how to maintain a little mini apartment under my supervision. I'm a little odd, but I love it. And so really, at this point, it is kind of like we have three little apartments upstairs and a communal living area downstairs with these teenagers, and I'm able to really declutter. So you don't have to wait until your last kid goes to college to really declutter. Now, overlapping phases. What happens if you're not having your babies in your 20s like I did? What if you have your babies in your 30s and you work full-time and you're not going to stop working full-time? Or what if you aren't blessed with children until you're in your 40s or later? Okay, if you're working full-time, this is actually a benefit to you because you'll never accumulate as much as a stay-at-home mom would. You just won't. If your kids go to daycare, then you don't need to accumulate the amount of toys and all of those things. You do still have to do all the clothing and the diapers and the food, obviously. But you don't have to accumulate the quantity of toys because they have toys at daycare. And often on the weekends, you'll probably take them out shopping and do events with them. And so they also don't need as many toys at home. If you have your child in your 40s, it's going to be similar as well. But as soon as you hit 40, you have this different mindset that you don't have in your 20s and 30s. And so it's part of getting all the fun things in the 20s when I had my kids was because I would go do play dates and everybody else had these toys and I would see them. And I bought the toys as much for me as I did for the kids. I mean, let's not lie. Kids had no clue what they had. I really enjoyed sorting the Legos. You wouldn't believe how many hours I spent sorting Legos. Okay, maybe you would believe it. But in your 30s and 40s, you just don't have that quantity of time. I would literally spend 3 or 4 days 1 week just sorting all of the Legos by color. I could have never done that in my 30s and 40s. I was able to do it because of the stage of life I was in. So you're not going to accumulate as many toys. And you have a different perspective. By the time you're in your 40s, you realize that, okay, I haven't had kids for the last 20 years, but I've heard 8 different times when we're supposed to wean our kids from the bottle or start the cereal. Like, they keep changing all of these rules. And you're like, okay, well, when I was a kid, we had whole milk when we were 6. So if I stick with the formula through 12 months, we're probably fine. You're just not as uptight about every decision. And you know that kids are pretty resilient and they're going to be fine. They're going to be just fine. You were fine. They're going to be fine. You're a much more laid back parent when you start older. I think it's not just like if you watch people that have multiple kids, they're more laid back with the subsequent children. But I also think it's the age of the mother. Like the older the mother, the more confident they are in their own abilities and the less they worry about what others think. So let me think if I've told you everything that I want to tell you about this first how phases overlap. A lot of this was a review on how the generations and the phases of life align and when you have your kids. Whenever you have your kids, there is going to be an accumulation aspect. So if you are in your 40s and you're in your prime earning years and you have your children at the same time, then you're going to be both an accumulation and survival. And the problem with that I see is you're also getting towards that downsizing and you're in that whole minimalist mindset anyway. And so you're not wanting to accumulate stuff because you can see in 5 to 10 years, you're going to want to downsize stuff. So why accumulate it to begin with? But the kids have to play with something. Otherwise, they're just going to be staring at you. So I think that there's more internal conflict about not wanting to accumulate so much stuff. But at the same time, the youngness of your children requires that you accumulate stuff just to get them through, especially these first 5 to 6 years. All right, I hope that gave you a perspective on having kids and how that impacts the accumulation cycle along with that survival one. And there was one other thing I was going to say. If you do not stay home with your kids and you have them in your 30s and 40s and you don't send them to daycare, the number one productivity tip I would give you is to get a nanny. I know it costs more money. I know a nanny costs more money than daycare does. But there are so many additional benefits that you don't really calculate out. And I think when you calculate it out, if you can afford it, dollar per hour, it's worth it. A nanny will keep up with all of the clothing changes. They will do the laundry. Often they will do the grocery shopping with your child. They will maintain your house and they will organize for you. Nannies are very organized and they like to organize it. They're just adult babysitters and many babysitters like to organize. They'll rotate through the toys. They'll clean different sections of your house that you want cleaned. They'll go run the errands. And so when you come home from work, you get to really just spend time and enjoy your baby or your young kids. And you don't have to worry about all the other things because not only have they cared for your child, but they've also taken care of all the accumulation aspects of the child, the laundry, the clothes, the food, the all of those things. And you can easily say, hey, this week I've noticed that we moved into the 6 to 9 month size. Could you please pull out the smaller sizes for me and put them in this bin? A nanny loves to do stuff like that. They've got plenty of time. The kids sleep all the time. And so you not only get the benefit of having your child get watched by a quality caregiver, just like you do in daycare. I mean, that's equal pretty much in both. People who go into the daycare field love kids, love babies. Either way, you're getting somebody that loves kids, loves babies, but you're also getting someone that will help maintain your house and help you through all of these accumulation things that you're going through. I also like the fact that if the kid has a low-grade fever, the nanny usually doesn't mind. And the baby loves to hang out with the nanny anyway, and so your schedule isn't as jostled as it would be in a daycare situation. Just some food for thought. All right, that's all I have on this one. Next week, I'm going to talk about what happens when you become an overnight caregiver in the blink of an eye.